Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's recording of Money Making Mothers. And you will be surprised that I'm not a Geordie or a person from Middlesbrough, whatever you class yourself as, Carla. I'm coming at you from Bristol. My name is Heidi. If you've listened to all Carla's podcasts before, I'm sure you've heard my West Country piratey farmer tones coming down through your ears. And I am taking over, shall I say, Carla's podcast this week, because I am now going to grill the original money-making mother. Carla is absolutely crap in her pants. She doesn't like it. I don't know why. It's probably because she's got loads of things to hide. She's got no control, and I have the control. Oh, yeah, which reminds me, I'm supposed to write down the time so that we don't go too waffly. Perfect. And basically, I'm going to ask Carla lots of questions about how she became the amazing woman that you hear before you. So let's try and make her as nervous as possible. Why don't you say about how scared you are and why?
I'm so scared because it's usually me doing what you're doing, and it's shit being on the other seat. I don't like it, but yeah, I'm excited because this is actually the end. So this is the reason we're doing this is the last episode of the interview. So I've done this episode marks a year of interviewing money making mothers. It's going to change to a diary of a money making mother, where I'm going to do a weekly episode of an update of everything that's been going on in my next journey, which will be revealed soon. So I thought it was only fair to do me as the last guest, considering the amount of people who always say, why are you a money making mother? Why do you get to interview people? So I'm glad you agreed to do it.
Okay, well, I'm glad I'm here too, and I'm glad that I've made zero preparation whatsoever for this chat, because sometimes I feel that if you write stuff down, things become really unnatural, and you and I have always been very natural with each other. So this should be a breeze. It's just like chatting over a cup of tea, isn't it? It'll be all over the place, it'll be random, and it'll just be like listening to two mates gassing, as we say down here. Right, why don't we then start with the absolute key question, is why are you a money making mother? How do you fall into that category?
Because I had Jackson when I was 20, and I've said it before in interviews, but I'll say it again for anyone who hasn't listened. Like, I didn't expect my life to have, I didn't have expect to have a baby at 20. I literally wanted to take over the world. Like, I was heading for being prime minister. Like, that was my aim. So, like, when I had Jackson, I was like, shit, like, what am I going to do? And I didn't want to give up on my career and put myself in a box that I knew I wouldn't belong in. So I continuously worked and went to uni and worked part-time, studied full-time, had Jackson, and then had Teddy, and then had Alba. And after having all three kids, finally decided to take the plunge and go self-employed and be an actual business owner, which is what I've always wanted to do. So, yeah, a decade of hard fucking work.
And when you got pregnant then, when you were 20, what were you doing work-wise? Obviously, you were studying.
I wasn't studying. So what I was doing was I'd just got a 10-year visa to be in America, to travel around America. And I'd went for the first 6 months with one of my best friends and was working in a ice cream shop on Venice Beach in LA.
Nice.
It was very nice. And we'd like done Vegas and like traveled and things around America. And we were coming home. It was like, we had to do, after 6 months, you had to come home for 2 weeks. And what I was planning on doing was going back and doing, like, changing my visa to a study visa so I could study out there and do, I want to do fashion buying. I don't know why, like, I'm shit at fashion. Like, I've got no sense of fashion whatsoever. I couldn't give two fucks. But at the time, I was like, what sounds cool? So I come home, and because I'd left college and went straight into working and then went to America, enrolled on, you know, one of those access courses where you do like 9 months and you get the equivalent so you could go to university. So that's what I was doing. I'd started that. Anyway, I was seeing Jackson's dad and got pregnant and was literally due. I'm not joking. This is exactly what happened. The day before I found out I was pregnant with Jackson, I booked a round the world trip. So I was going to go around the world and do like loads of different stops and then finish back in America. So obviously that went tits up. So I ended up getting pregnant and having Jackson and stayed here. And then I started uni when Jackson was 9 months.
Ah, I see. Bloody hell, that must have been hard work. How the hell did you do that with a baby?
Oh, because I lived with my grandma and granddad. Like, my grandma and granddad were a mate. Like, Jackson went to nursery, got, like, the 3 hours for student. Jackson went to nursery during the day. And then on a night, I used to go and work in a call centre 5 till 9, Monday to Friday. And then study during the day. And then I'd Jackson in between. I've always had really good support, but he's always done both, like childcare and grandma and granddad. Like, he was my grandma and granddad's angel. So, yeah, they helped me a lot.
Bloody hell, that's hard work. I vaguely remember my mum used to do something similar when she wasn't studying, but she'd look after us kids all day and then she'd go and work in Ginster's pasty factory at nighttime. Yeah. So she never slept, basically. What did you study at uni?
English and creative writing.
With a view to doing what?
To honestly, Heidi, I've been a view to be fucking everything. Like, this is what makes me laugh. Like, literally, when people say, oh, I don't know what I want to do. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I forever put so much pressure on myself because, like, my mum and dad, like, didn't reach their potential. They could have done so much more than they did. Like, my mum's like a mental health nurse now. She's absolutely amazing. But at the time, I'm saying when they were younger, they didn't do, you know, they didn't take your normal path. And I was always, as a kid, like, so determined that, oh, like, I want to do something that people will be proud of. And honestly, I've been studying to be a solicitor, an accountant, a doctor, a teacher, a university lecturer, like, anything that you can think of that's like a well-respected job, like, well done, like, yeah. That's what I've wanted to do. So I went to do English because I was really good at English in school and I loved writing. And I thought, I'm going to be an English teacher and write a book. And I did it just for the crack, really. And I've never used it since, apart from on my LinkedIn posts. So it was really useful.
But you must have, aside from the, I mean, I don't use my degree. I've got a bloody degree in drama, for God's sake. Like, oh,
piss off. Yes, you do. Perfect degree for you.
Perfect for me and all the drama in my life.
Yeah, marvellous.
What was the, I was going to ask you something really good then, so it's just completely gone out my head. Yeah, it doesn't really matter in a lot of ways whether you use your degree or not, but what other, like, lessons did you learn? Obviously, you were extremely resilient to be able to study, work, and look after a child all at the same time. But what else did you learn?
Well, during that time as well, so I started in the July before I started my degree in September. So Jackson was born in the January, and I started my degree in September. Mm. And my dad had died of a drug overdose in the July.
Oh my God.
So he died in the July, and then I did my first year of uni, and then my granddad was like my dad. And in the second year when I started, the first day of uni, my granddad took ill and was really bad, and he ended up in hospital for 6 months on life support, in and out of like different hospitals and things. And then he died in the February of the second year. I dealt, like, that hit me really, really, really bad. Like, I never dealt with my dad dying. My attitude was always like, I've got to be strong and I've got to crack on, and just cracked on, just kept myself busy. When my granddad died, that was like really bad, because I lived at the hospital, like, in between working and in between studying, I would be at the hospital because I never wanted to leave him. Like, I was there every opportunity I could be there. Even when he was in Newcastle, I'd finish work and I'd drive an hour up the road to sit with him for 2 hours and then drive back. And he died in the February. And then I got pregnant in the May with Teddy. So I managed to finish, I passed my second year, and then the final year, my dissertation, I was literally heavily pregnant with Teddy. Like, I had Teddy in the December, I was heavily pregnant when I was writing my dissertation, because I knew I wouldn't be able to finish it in the following couple of months because I'd have a newborn. And I ended up passing my degree with a 2-1. Not that it matters what you get, but 2-1's a decent mark considering.
And bloody brilliant. Crikey.
I learned that, I don't know, it's a good and bad thing. Like, I know I'm resilient, and I know that I get on and get on with shit, and I don't feel sorry for myself, because I think, what's the point? What is the point? Me sitting here feeling sorry for myself at the time is not going to do anything apart from put me and my children further back. But at the same time, I don't think it was very healthy the way I dealt with it, because all it did was, like, grief just bubbles up into an explosion. And all I did throughout all of it was crack on. I'm doing this. When in reality, I was dying inside and didn't do anything about it till years later. So it helped. It's weird. It was like the cure and the cause at the same time. It helped, but then it damaged me further on. But yeah.
Yeah. But you were doing what you needed to do in survival mode, really, when you've got kids and
literally
career to think about, studying and everything. Have you had a moment then when it's really hit you, everything that you've been through?
No, you know what it is? It's as the kids get older as well, I think. Like, when the kids get older, and I don't know whether it's that you mature more as well, but you see them, and especially with, like, my granddad and my dad, I think, oh my God, like, I was my dad's little princess. I was my granddad's absolute, like, my granddad idolized me, like, ridiculously. And, like, especially with Alba, since Alba's been born, it's bothered me more than it ever did before, because I think I see her like they would have seen her. Does that make sense? Like, it breaks my heart that she's never going to get that with either of them. And it's like, I think I've had more moments since Alba's been born than I ever did previously, because it sort of hit me like a truck more that they're not, that people are missing out, not just them, but her as well. And there's nothing I can do to fix that. And that's really hard to swallow when, as a mother, you cannot fix it. Like, I can go to work, I can study, I can give them a nice house, I can go on nice holidays, I can be a good mom, but I can't replace that part that's missing. And that's really hard to, like, get your head around. So I've probably had the most moments since Alba's been born, because it's just slapped me in the face.
Yeah. That's quite a lot of pressure to put on yourself, though, because if you think with kids and how resilient they are, that to be blunt, they don't miss what they've never had, because they never knew what it felt like. But you're taking on all that pain on her behalf and mourning something that is probably not never going to cross her mind. But
I know exactly what you're saying. You're bang on. Yeah. Like, I'm mourning my little girl, like me as a little girl. Like,
yes.
I remember my childhood memories, all the good ones, my granddad's in it, like all of them. Like, honestly, anyone who knows me knows what mine and my granddad's relationship was like. So, like, it breaks my heart that my granddad doesn't get to do that with Alba. And you're right. That's what I mean. It's like, it's not even about the kids. It's like, I'm mourning me, but I see it, but she makes me see it more because I see me in her. Do you know what I mean? Like, as a little girl, like, she just reminds, her attitude and the way she is just like I was. And like, my grandma absolutely idolizes her and things, and she's always commenting about my granddad. But she said to me the other day, it was funny, you know, it wasn't funny, but like, she went to me, she was sat in the kitchen, her and Teddy, and she went, "Mummy, where's your daddy?" I said, "Oh, my daddy's died, Alba. My daddy's in heaven." And she said, "So is your daddy dead in the ground?" And I said, "Yeah, my daddy's dead in the ground." And she said, "Oh, did you cry?"
Like the emoji face.
Literally going, "Oh my God." Yes. I was like, little bitch. Yeah.
But aren't kids so grounding, though? Because they just say it exactly how it is. And then it is funny.
Yeah.
And you think, well, yeah, because you can't change it. And I think that's I know, so people might be listening to thinking, oh my God, but I think that's really healthy, really healthy. I mean, I've always been so open and honest with my kids about all different things of trauma. And the reality is like, yeah, 1 minute they might cry and the next minute they're like, pull my finger or something. So kids are just, you know, really resilient. And if it brings you a little bit of laughter, you go, well, yeah, the reality is they, I'm glad you use the word died, because a lot of people use really airy fairy language with children, which can be even more complicated, I think.
Yeah, so like when they say like, oh, they're asleep, like I don't want my kids petrified of sleep and
going
like,
to bed.
Yeah. Or like Teddy's very, very he's got high emotion, Teddy, like he isn't like, you know, like his emotional IQ is very, very intense, like he remembers things and he connects with stuff very quickly. And he's been asking me loads lately about like my dad and my granddad. And the other day he said to me, did granddad die in hospital? And I thought, you're gonna connect now if you ever have to go to hospital, that's death. And I was like, no, I said, granddad was in hospital, but granddad was sick. I said, but granddad died because he just died. I said, it was nothing to do with the hospital or what was going on. Yeah. Because then I know what Teddy's like. He'd go, if I had to take him to hospital, he'd say, am I gonna die, because that's that's the only thing that can do, isn't it? It's association with it's gonna happen to me. So I don't like it when people say, oh, they've gone to, like, you know, if I said my dad fell asleep and never woke up, like
I'm never sleeping again. I have nightmares forever. Yeah, it's really, really bad. But it's that inherent thing of wanting to protect your kids from the reality of the dark side of life, but by doing them an injustice by doing that, by sugarcoating things or making up some kind of, oh, they floated away on a cloud or something, and you know, that kind of thing, which is very nice and we all feel like it's the right thing, but actually in the long run it just causes more problems down the line. You've got to be, well, I believe that you being open and honest like that, it is super, super healthy.
Definitely.
So and you're all, they're always going to come out of questions. I mean, tell me about your dad then. So obviously if he's died of a drug overdose, what was the situation there then? Is this something he lived with for a long time or?
Yeah, he was, he had drug battles all his life, from us being, from before we were even born. He was an amazing man, our dad. Like, honestly, if the majority of my, I'm very like my dad, very like my mum as well, but like I've got all my mum's nice side and my mum's caring side and she's very thoughtful, but my dad was very driven, very determined, and he drilled into me, like even when he was like, he was a heroin addict, even when he was an addict, he'd become obsessive at one point about me and me being at school and things. So we went to London, we had to leave and go to London when I was 11. And I started a new school, and literally it was like a ritual. Every time I'm coming from school, he'd be like, right, planner. And I'd look, he'd get the planner out and he'd look and he'd go through and he'd be like, right, you haven't done this, you need to do this, you need to do that. And he'd sit me down and it was very intense, but at the same time, he was always very vocal, which is something I've took on with my kids. He was always very vocal as to why he was doing it. He wouldn't just say, you need to do your homework. He'd say, you need to do your homework because you are going to be something amazing and you need to work hard to be what you need to be. And he always, like, we used to go on walks and he'd say, like, I could have done this, I could have done that. I always went, like, from a kid, from being 7-year-old, I'd get up and go to the boot sales with our dad, and our dad had got me, right, sell X amount of these and I'll give you this. And I'd be like, right, Nolly, I'm going to do it. And I'd smash it and he'd be like, well done. I'd love, like, I always craved the praise and recognition of my dad because I held him quite high in terms of, he always spoke a lot of sense, regardless of what was going on. My dad was a very wise man, like, and I think it was because of everything he'd gone through through his life. Although it was weird, although he couldn't always see things clearly for himself, he could see things clearly for everybody else. And he always gave me really good advice, and his advice that I still use now, you know, with my kids, because he always made me feel like I was invincible and that I could do anything, but I had to put the work in for it. It was like, no one's going to come and knock on your door and do it for you. And I used to say things like, and I use it now and it makes me cringe when I say it, because I used to hate him when I said it. I'd go, well, I thought this. And he'd go, we don't get paid for thinking, Carly. You get paid for knowing. No one gets paid for thinking. You get paid for knowing. So don't come back with thoughts. You need to know. And I was like, how can you know everything? And I say the same thing now with Jackson. I'm like, oh my God, you bastard. Like, you've probably stuck in my head. But like, he just, when I had Jackson, when I told my dad was the only person I was scared of telling, like my mum was absolutely buzzing. She couldn't wait to be a nana. My grandma and granddad, absolutely fine. But my dad, I remember ringing my dad and saying, oh, I'm pregnant. And he was like, all right. And there was silence. And he went, so you're just going to be another pram pusher then, eh? And that was it. And I was like, no. And he was like, you are though, aren't you? I thought you were going to do something. I thought you were going to be something incredible, but you've chose a different path. And I was like, you fucking bastard. I am not like that. And to this day now, genuinely, I still sit and think whenever I do anything, I always think I'd love, because he's not here. And it's sad because I'd love him to see what I've done. I'd love him to see everything that I've achieved. Not that it's everything, yeah. You know, I've got more I want to do, but I'd love to say it to him. I'd love him to say it to me, well, you're not a pram pusher. But he died. He died now. Well, he literally probably died a year, around about a year later. And he didn't see it. At that time, I was on maternity. I hadn't even started uni. I hadn't done anything. So that's a bit shit. But hopefully he can hear me if there's such a thing as the afterlife. And he feels like shit about what he says.
But do you think he meant that quite literally, or do you think he used that as a way to put even more fire under your ass?
1,000,000%, like that one, the second one. Like he always did that. Like he'd say things knowing he was a manipulator. He was a massive manipulator, yeah. Our dad. But like good and bad, he used it in, yeah, a good way and a bad way. But that'll have been him. It'll probably been a bit of both. I'm pissed off at you because I expected better, but you're not going to get away with it. You're going to have to like work harder. Like that's how he was. And even though we didn't have a very healthy, good relationship all the time, he always knew how to work me.
Yeah.
So he's probably, probably I've got to him to thank for a lot of it, but at the same time, it still wasn't very nice.
No, it's not nice to hear at the time. And it's hard when somebody you can't speak to them and they can't tell you how proud they are, which I'm 100% sure he is massively proud of you. Because what you've achieved is actually quite phenomenal given your circumstances, because a lot of people would make that assumption. If somebody pregnant at 20, well, their life's over, then they are just going to wind up in a council flat and not do anything with their lives. So this should be quite inspiring for a lot of people for those reasons that actually, and you know that, you know you're a hard ass. I know I'm a hard ass. And we both know that you don't get something for nothing and that you have to push boundaries constantly all the time. So how did you go then from that point of when you've graduated with a degree that you think, well, I'm not going to use this? What happens next after that?
So I was pregnant with Ted. I'd had Teddy. So at my graduation, it was Jackson, and Teddy was 9 months old, I think he was. And I didn't know what I wanted to do or what I was meant to do. And I just started then, like, I saved, you know, like every bit of student loan I got, every bit of grant I got, I saved because I'd worked. Because I was like, because I wasn't able from like 19, 20 to go full-time work, I thought, I don't want this to have an effect on me being able to buy a house. So what I did was all the grants I got, I saved and I worked and I lived off the money I earned instead and banked all of my grants towards a deposit for a house. So me and Keo bought our first house, and I got a job as a in sales, because it's weird, right? But I think there's a big thing on sales where people think it's a shit job. You know, like sales is just like for me, I always looked at it as sort of like as a get out. Like, oh, if I can't do anything else, I'll go back to sales. Because I was always good at it. I was mint at sales. And usually nice, good people who people like to be around or speak to are good at sales, because it's about people buying people. And
yeah.
And my dad was a salesman, and I don't know why I always had this stigma attached to sales. Like it was sort of, oh, yeah, it's good money, but I want to be something like a doctor. I want people to say, oh, look, she's a doctor, because it was about recognition from other people rather than myself. Yeah. And it only got to a point where I'd been working part-time, studying, and I'd qualified and I'd been working part-time for another 6 months after Teddy was born. And I thought, right, I want to start earning some decent money now. And this job, I'd seen this job, and it was a sales rep. basically going out trying to get business for Howden's Joinery, and it was good wage, car company car. I thought, oh, fuck it, I'm going to go for it. Anyway, I was there. I ended up being there 2 years. Got promoted to a kitchen designer, started designing kitchens, selling kitchens. But again, like, without sounding like a big-headed person, the way I'm wired is, if you give me something to do, I'm gonna smash it as quickly as possible, because I want you to know that I can do it better than anyone else can. Like, that's just the way I go about anything I do, because it's just the way I am. And I did. And by the time I'd finished and I was pregnant with Alba, I was like, I've done everything. Like, you know, I've got the most sales accounts opened in the Northeast in the shortest amount of time. I've sold the most kitchens in the shortest amount of time. And I was like, oh, you're making me work 40 hours a week. I'm not enjoying it. And I'm a big believer in, and I always was, I'm a big believer in, if you don't enjoy what you're doing, why are you fucking doing it? Why are you doing it? You work 70% of your life. You're going to be working. Most people are going to be working until they're 68. And the average expectancy of life is what? 75, 78, 80. So you're going to get 10 years. If you hate your job, you're going to get 10 years of enjoyment. That's bollocks. Absolute bollocks. You need to do what makes you happy. And whilst I like having a challenge, when I was getting challenged, I was happy because it was making me tick. I stopped getting ticked because I'd done everything they'd asked me to do. And then I was pregnant with Albert, and I thought, I'm going to have three kids doing 40 hours a week, 8 or 6 every other Saturday. I don't want to do it anymore. Like, it's too much. Like, and I'm not getting enough back from it. I couldn't justify the sacrifice I was taking in terms of childcare and time away from them with the job, because I wasn't actually enjoying it.
Yeah.
So the bloke who does my mortgages had said to me numerous times before, you'd be amazing at insurance, you'd be amazing at it, you'd be amazing, like, you need to do it. And I just kept being like, nah, commission based, no, like, it's too, I don't like the risk, like, it's not safe enough. I've got house and mortgage and everything. And just before I had Albert, I thought, sod it, what's the worst that's going to happen? Worst that's going to happen is I'm going to do it for 3 months. I can do it when I go back to work. I can still be earning a wage, do this on a night. And if I don't like it, I don't have to do it anymore. And that's when I did it and absolutely loved it and just never, ever looked back. I literally, in the first month that I was working, I went back to Howden's part-time after maternity, and I was doing insurance on a night. And in the first month, I earned more than I would in 6 months working. So I was like,
blimey. That's a no-brainer. Oh my god, that's so mental that you did both as well at the same time, and you've got three kids at this point, and oh my god, you're
and
like,
Keo was working away,
was he? So
at this point, Keo had been working away since Alba was 2 weeks old. He only did it for a year, like, because I had nearly had a mental breakdown because I did it, but it was like, it was just got like this thing you were on about earlier about like resilience, like, I'd done that already with uni and work, so I knew, but for me, it's like, I'd rather try, and if it's too hard and I fail, so what, but at least I've tried, at least I can say, well, I tried that. There's nothing worse than having an actual regret and thinking, I wish I'd done that. Like, there's no excuse for me. Like, you can do anything. The only thing holding you back is you. So if I'd have said, oh no, I've got to go back and do the 3 months, and then, oh, well, I need the wage, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. But I thought, all right, it's going to be hard work for 3 months, but it's 3 months. It's fuck on. Yeah. Like, just crack on and see what happens.
Yeah. So you go and start working as working for insurance as a broker. Do you call it a broker?
Yeah, like a protection specialist, insurance advisor, basically.
And you loved it. What did you love, or what do you love about it?
And I still love it. I absolutely, honest to God, like, It sounds daft, but I absolutely love what I do. Like, I love it. I love it because, one, it's amazing in terms of, like, the flexibility. If I want to take 5 weeks off, I'll take 5 weeks off because I can. Yeah. The money that you earn is incredible. And what you can do in terms of, like, for me, it's limitless. Like, I can do anything with this job. I can make my own brokerage. I can just work for myself and no one else if I want. I can create a network where everyone, there's branches all over the UK. And that's what I needed. And I, all from being a kid, from being, I'll never forget, I was laid in bed reading A Stone for Danny Fisher, I think it was called, I think it's called A Stone for Danny Fisher. I was laid in bed reading it. And I just remember thinking, I need to own my own business. I need to work for myself. I don't want to work for anyone else. And all the way through life, I've always thought, what can I do to work for myself? What can I do to do this? Like, and this has just given me the opportunity to like fulfill all of that need of wanting to do what I want to do and do it with for my reasons. And it helps people. Like, a lot of people turn their nose up at insurance, and I get why. I genuinely do, because if I'm being totally honest, it's been shitly advised and people aren't doing it for the right reasons, because it's good money. A lot of people are just doing it just to get the commission. Now, you know, and I know, like, the way I do things is like, I'm very, very honest. I'm very straight, and I always think to myself, I'm going to treat this, every client gets treated the same way I'd want my grandma to be treated. Because if I've treated them the way I'd want my grandma to be treated, I'll never do no wrong. And that's like I go about everything. And it works. And it works because you're never going to catch someone out who's not being, who's being genuine. If you're always genuine, you're always yourself with whoever you talk to. Like, I ring my clients, go, "Hey, love, you all right?" Like, I'll always be myself. Because one thing that, I don't know, it sounds corny, but if you're not yourself, you're going to get caught out at some point somewhere by someone. And if you're always true to who you are, if people don't like it, fine. There's plenty of other people out there who'll be able to look after you. But if you want someone who's going to just treat you the way I'd want myself to be treated, then you're going to be all right, because I'll look after you. And it's, touch wood so far, it's done me no wrong, and it's helped me do everything I've done. And I just buzz off it. I absolutely buzz off it. And it's the best thing for anyone out there is sitting thinking, I want to do this, but I'm scared to go self-employed. Just fucking do it, please. Please just do it. If it doesn't work, you'll get another job. What is the worst scenario? I always think, what's the worst that's going to happen? When we bought this house, it's a massive more mortgage. It was a bigger thing. And Keo's a shitty ass. Keo shits himself everything. But with this. And I was like, yeah, but what's the worst that's going to happen? The worst that's going to happen is we can't afford it. We sell the house. End of. We'll buy another house. Like, we can deal with that. So why are we putting ourselves in a barrier? Like, we can do it. You're just scared and you're not willing to take the risk. And that, like, me going self-employed and then leaving the self-employed and creating my own business, like, I shit myself. It was absolutely petrifying. I was so scared, but it's paid off so much. And at the worst that was going to happen is I'd have to go back and get another job, which you can do.
Yeah, it's amazing to have that. It's not a confidence or an arrogance or anything like that. It's that lack of ultimate fear. Obviously you do have fear. You shit yourself when you left your job to become self-employed. That's normal. That's being a rational human being. But having the power and to be able to, I love that. Like, so many people will spend their entire lives, like you say, sat in a job that they don't really like, because they're too scared to do something different and to take that leap of faith, when actually the safety net is that you can just quite easily go back and get a different job. So why are people, what do you think is the difference? Why do you think that you've got the balls to do that and a lot of people don't?
Because I want it. And if you want something, you'll get it. Like, and it's the belief. Like, I feel like a lot of people don't do things because they don't have the belief in themselves and they don't have the self-worth, and they think that they're not, you know, oh, but I'd love to do that, but you know, like, my husband works away and I need to do this. And no, you can change that. Just because right now you do the school run morning and night doesn't mean that, for 3 months you might not do the school run on a night because you'd be too busy. But now, further down the line, you can change that. Like, everything, nothing's permanent. There's nothing permanent in someone's life. There really isn't. That we're going to die, and that's the only permanent thing I know. So I know I'm going to die. And I don't want to die thinking, I wish I'd done this and I wish I'd done that, because life is genuinely too short. And if you've got anything in your head that you'd love to do, the worst that's going to happen is you're going to fail. So fuck. The Edison did 1,001 attempts to make the light bulb. And if at number 1,000, he'd listened to everyone who'd said, you're taking the piss now. Like, stop blowing up. And stop doing this. You're literally having our eyes out. Like, behave. And he kept saying, and I've listened to this on a book, and he was like, every single attempt he did, he wrote the reason why it had not gone right, wrong, like why it had not worked. And when people say, why'd you keep doing that? He was like, because the reason I've gone wrong might be the reason that something else goes right.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is genius. And on the 1001th time, he created the light bulb. So, and the man's a fucking legacy hero. You know, he created electricity. Like, everybody along the line told him to stop and he didn't stop. So when you sat there and you're thinking, oh, I want to do this, but I'm scared. What's the worst that's going to happen? What is actually the worst that's going to happen? Unless it's going to harm you physically, there's no reason why you can't do it. Like, do not put yourself into a box and think that you're not worth trying for, because you are worth trying for. Because if you're not happy, and this is one of the things like that made me want to create the podcast, because when I was working at Howden's and I was doing 46 hours a week, people had no issue with helping with the kids because I was working for someone else. Now, when I started to go self-employed, it suddenly become a, we don't have to work that much. Well, why aren't you picking the kids up? You don't have to work that much. You can choose. And I was like, yeah, I can choose. And I'm choosing to put my graft in because I know it's going to benefit us further down the line. Like,
yeah,
you had no issue when I was working for Howden's, you know, with that. Like, so why is it an issue now? And there's this like stigma with, oh, well, you're choosing to do that. Well, no, I'm choosing to have a career and I'm choosing to provide. So if you've got an issue with that, you didn't when I was working at Howden, so it's bollocks, really.
Yeah. And do you think you get more shit being a mum than you would if you were a dad? Like, oh, I sometimes feel that... Pardon?
If I had a dick, there'd be no issue. Like,
yeah,
you went and worked away for 8 weeks when Alba was 2 weeks old. No one said
no one bats an eyelid, do they? No. That really pisses me off. Do you get mum guilt?
Oh my God, all the time. Like, I feel sometimes I sit, if I'm being totally honest, sometimes I sit and think, like, I'm a shit mum because I should be doing other things than what I am doing. Like, you know, sometimes I shouldn't take a 7 o'clock appointment because I should be bathing the kids instead of Keo doing it, or of, you know, of them doing things that I could be doing with them. But then I look at my kids and I think, my kids, I know everyone probably says this, but they're so happy and loving, and they've grown to be such beautiful humans that I'm not doing too bad, because if I was doing bad, I'd see that I was doing bad in them. And I've got a good relationship with all of them, all different relationships. And ultimately for me, as a mother, for you to be the best mother you can be, you have to be happy.
Yeah.
Because if I was sat baking cakes and doing stenciling Monday to Friday, I would be suicidal. Now, if that makes me a good mother for all of the world to see, you're full of fucking shit, I'm afraid. You're full of shit.
Yeah.
Because
for
me to be happy shows them that they can be happy, and what happiness is. And me working and having a career makes me happy and makes me whole. And without it, I've done it, Heidi. I was, when I didn't work, even when I was on maternity, I was not in a good place because mentally I don't suit it. I do not suit not working. It's just not who I am. And it's, for me, your happiness is the most important thing, not money. Like, this is where people get very confused. I'm lucky that the job I do is good money, but ultimately it's about being happy. If you're happiest earning less money than what you're earning in a job, then do it, because your happiness is the most important thing, because this is your life you're talking about. People talk about, you know, your career as if it's just like a side hustle. It's not a side hustle. It's taking up 70% of your life.
Yeah.
Like, make sure you're happy doing it, because otherwise what you're saying is you're not happy in life.
Yeah.
Because that your job equates to the majority of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So many people fall into that trap, and it's really hard. I mean, I had a career as a police officer, and then, which I did love. And then for one reason or another, I found myself self-employed. And as much as I miss my old job, I fucking love my new job. I love my boss. She's awesome. And you just think, well, yeah, it's bloody brilliant, because, yes, it's scary. It's scary in that gap, not knowing what you're going to do. But then being in charge of your own world and loving what you do is super, super important. And then you want to work and everything's great most of the time, because you're doing something that you love. And just to completely do a sidebar now, Can you imagine the difference between, say, you didn't have all that resilience instilled in you, and that if I took you back to being 20 and you were pregnant and you stopped working, you couldn't go to uni, you got a council flat, and if you take yourself there, how do you think you would have felt doing that? It's a bit of a tricky question. No, but there's a reason I'm asking it.
I know the answer for it, because I did it. Like, when I was first pregnant with Jackson, I went and got and only people from around my way will know it, but I went and got me and my friend who'd gone to America, which went from living in LA to living in Doggy, in a 2 beds, awful street, awful place. But we were like, this is what we've got to do type thing. She wanted independence. I wanted to be like, you know, doing it for myself. And we were there for about, moved in there. We were there for about 9 months. And I was depressed to fuck, because I would sit around and think, this is not what I wanted. Like, and I took a step back and moved it back in with my grandma, my granddad. And like, that's another thing as well, when people are scared to take step backs sometimes make you go 5 steps forward. Like,
yeah.
And I took that step back. It wasn't about the money, to be honest. Like, I always paid like lodge and stuff. It was more to do with like mentally, I could see a better way of working towards what I wanted than when I was in there, because it put me in a very dark place in terms of like, I felt as if I was stuck because I was there. And that there's nothing wrong. Look, there's loads of people who have a baby, get a council house, and they're totally happy. And that's like, I don't want anyone to think that I'm, because, you know, I was brought up all the way through on a council estate. There's nothing wrong with being in that situation. But the problem is when people just accept it and settle. And that's the part that's scary, is the settling. If you want to be there and you're happy and you're doing, like I said earlier, you're doing everything you want to do, crack on, like, go you, I'm buzzing for you. Like, that's exactly as it should be. I'm not saying everyone needs to be a millionaire and everyone needs to be having the high life. It's about being happy in it. And I wasn't happy in it. And I wasn't cut out to be that. And whether that's because my dad told me that so much that it just got instilled in me, in my brain, that I never would forget it, or whether it's just who I am as a person. But I always knew that I was, it sounds a bit cocky, but I don't mean it cocky, but I knew I was destined for more. I always knew that, like, my dad hasn't died for nothing. And my granddad hasn't gone through what he's gone through for nothing. And I've got to make, like, my everything I do, I always think I'm going to make something positive come from this. Like, was my childhood the way it was? Shit. Yeah, it was shit. Was my dad dying of drug overdose? Yeah, it was shit. But I use that as my fuel to get better and do more, than rather than let it make me who I am and just be for nothing. Like, I don't want it to be for nothing. I want it to say that that's the reason why I've done what I've done, because it inspired me and motivated me for more.
Bloody hell. It's absolutely amazing. How did you... So you sent me a little video a while back of this house that you now live in. And I looked at it and I thought, canals, like, it's off Cribs. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Like, a world away from what you would imagine is like being... I mean, I grew up in a council estate as well. And but down south, it's not that hard, but, you know, it's not ideal. It's just such a huge difference. And how did you feel when you got the keys for your home?
There's actually, I did a TikTok, believe it or not. I hate TikTok, but I did a TikTok of like moving day, so I'll send you a thing. And at the last bit, my friend who was helping me move, we got the keys, and I literally held the key and I broke down, like, literally broke down. And there's a picture, and Keo stood next to me, and Keo just grabbed me, because I don't cry often.
Yeah.
And Keo just grabbed hold of me and is cuddling me, and there's a picture of just me and Keo cuddling in front of the door, and it's got like a red ribbon on it that my friend had put on.
I'm welling up now, for God's sake.
but it was like all of that, like, and my friend was like, why are you crying? I was like, because I'm happy, and I'm like, it's like, yes, like, yes, fucking get in. Like, this is why I've done what I've done. And my kids, they hadn't seen the house. My kids are going to come and see this house and see the garden and be like, wow. Like, and they're so happy here and the village is so beautiful. And every day I am grateful for like coming down. Me and Keo still say, we come down in the village and we like, Keo says it gives me butterflies because we're like, this is where we live. Like, and it's amazing, but it was fucking hard getting it. Never had any, you know, it was all hard graft, but that's why I cried, because I think it was just a thing of fucking hell, like, yes, I'm so glad I trusted myself and I did what I needed to do, because it's worth it.
And what did the kids think then when they first arrived at the house?
Honestly, Teddy like was running around. Teddy's a little arsehole, like, honestly, he's the most honest out of all of them. He runs around and he's going, oh my god, mom, this is a mansion. Oh my god, mom, we've got 3 bathrooms. The garden, like, the kids, honestly, like, my office, you can see the garden, like, literally, I can see the full thing. And the kids,
it's not a garden, it's a bloody field.
Yeah, but it's a garden, right? So the kids are like, the goal's there, and there's like a homemade swing, and like last week I'm sat here and I looked out and I can see Alba on the swing and I can see Jackson and Teddy playing football, and I'm just like, yeah, that's what you work for. Like, that's what you work for. I'm not materialistic at all. Like, I'm not asked about designer shit. I'm not asked about, like, you know, showing things that other people are. I'm not. The only thing I'm bothered about is memories. Like, I'll spend a fortune on a holiday. I'll spend fortunes going places to have experiences. And, like, for me, looking out and seeing them playing in the garden is everything I've ever worked for. Like, that makes it worth it right there.
Amazing. I think you're bloody brilliant. I love you even more now after this podcast than I did before. Yeah. I just think you're amazing. Don't cry. Look at me.
I know.
Like, that's just made me well up. That's bloody ridiculous. Shame on me.
Sorry.
I think you're amazing. And well done. And incredibly inspirational to all mums out there and dads as well.
Yeah.
Thinking about, you know, not having mum guilt is massively important, because actually, yes, you can make the cookies and paint, finger paint every day. But if you're not happy, like you say, then the kids won't be happy. They just want to be in a happy environment. And that is absolutely crucial. And what you're providing for them is amazing. But you're getting the best of both worlds, because you're giving them everything amazing, but you're also experiencing all of that with them and making these memories, and you're putting them first, but you're also really happy, which is only going to ever roll down onto them and only ever going to be a positive thing. So I think it's incredible. And you're very inspirational, Carla.
Thank you.
So
feel a bit silly now.
You shouldn't.
Oh, yeah.
I'll look forward to the Money Making Mother's Diary then.
Yeah, well, the Money Making Mother's Diary is going to be basically, it's the next step in the business. So I'm taking another leap. Well, I've just took one a couple of weeks ago, and again, shit myself, but thought, again, what's the worst that's going to happen? Like, I need to do it. So I'm starting something else in the next couple of weeks, and I want to be, I think a lot of it, like with social media and things, a lot of the reason why people don't always go out and go for it, because you only ever see the good side of it. And, you know, like, I've spoke today about all the good side, but there's also a shitty side, like, you know, when you are stressed and you've got loads on and you don't switch off. And but all of that is classed as your hard work that is ultimately repaid with, like what I said, like looking out the window and seeing the kids. So I want to try and be as open as I can be, and just once a week, just literally just me check in, do a video that gets, you know, turned into a podcast, and say, this is what's happened this week, this is the progress I've made with this, and let people actually see it evolve from day dot to a year's time and see where it's gone. And as well, for me, I want to look back on it like in a year's time and be like, you had no idea what was going to happen there, and you ran with it and learn to be a bit more, I suppose, a bit more proud of what I've done. And sometimes I think looking back helps you move forward. Not all the time, you don't look back on bad things, but when you look back on what you've achieved,
Yeah.
What you thought you were going to do to compared to what you have done, it helps and it keeps you motivated and going. So that's going to start next week after this is aired.
Ooh, it's exciting.
So yeah, but thank you for interviewing me today. I'm presuming that's well, fun.
Thanks for asking me. I feel very privileged to have been given the honour to interview you.
Who else was going to interview me apart from you? Everyone else. It was come on over. Could... No, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just gonna run with it. Heidi, you've not got any notes? No, I'm just gonna start.
I'm not good with stuff like that because as soon as I have to like conform to something, I'll fuck it up.
You did very well.
Well, you know. But
right, so you're going to end it then, or do you want me to end it?
Well,
are you going to round up the episode or what? Who's rounding up?
Should I round it up? Do you want me to
round it up?
Well, that has been very inspirational. 50 minutes with Carla, picking through the detritus of her brain and all the things that she has done, which clearly show why she's as successful as she is, and not just as a businesswoman, but also as a mother and a wife. Resilience is obviously key to be able to withstand anything that's challenging. And obviously everything that you've been through to this point has made you the tough person that you are. It's always important to remember to have time where you do reflect on things and also to let your guard down a little bit and be slightly vulnerable, maybe have a cry. Even if it's getting a new house key, that's the perfect opportunity to do that, because tears don't always have to be a sad thing. It's just that stress relief. And I think it's really important for all women out there to hear that, you know, we don't have to conform to a certain thing that people expect us to do when we are mums, that we can juggle lots of different things, but ultimately the main goal is to be happy. And I think you've proved in abundance how important that is and how women can basically be completely in control of their own lives. And we don't have to conform to all these things that our mums did in the 50s and things like that.
And you do get just like, just to summarize that, like in total honesty, I get constant remarks all the time about how much I spend working or what I do and the hours I do and how little time I might spend with the kids 1 week. I get it all the time from all different angles, but I can honestly hand on heart say I and the kids and Keo have never been happier than what we are now. And everybody has a norm that they think is right. And your norm can be different to other people's. Like my norm is my norm and my kids are happy with that because like you said earlier, they don't know what they haven't known. And that's fine. So don't ever let anybody make you feel like, oh, I can't do that because, you know, they'll think this or they think this. Fuck them. It's not their life. It's your life.
No, it's
and
not.
As long as you're happy living it, that's all that matters. And the day my kids say to me, Mom, I don't like you working this much, I swear to you, I would stop working as much as I was. I would never, ever let my kids feel like they weren't the most important thing. But I am not fucking stopping for anybody else telling me I'm working too much. The only people that matter to me are Keo and the kids. And as long as they're happy, I'm happy. And everybody else should make sure they're putting themselves first, because ultimately, the only people that matter are the people under your roof. And that's it.
Yeah, definitely. And on that note, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
For listening. Thank you.
Thank you for a lovely year of listening. Thank you for all the support. It's been incredible and I'm forever grateful. And if anyone ever needs me or wants any help, contact me anywhere. Money Making Mothers, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. I want to help as many people as possible. But thank you for the year of support. And thank you, Heidi, for always being such a big fan. I love you.
You too.